Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this last day of November, the 30th of November. Monday at 9, it's All Things Political. Julie Mason is our guest this hour, White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner. This is going to be a week when Afghanistan is much discussed, and we'll be talking about what the president may be saying tomorrow when he gives his speech before an audience at West Point, and what you would like to hear him say tomorrow when he gives that speech. We're also going to talk about global warming, the summit in Copenhagen, the Senate debating health care reform this week. Will it be a difficult month for them to come up with some kind of plan? Will they come up with some kind of plan? What about the number of people who are underemployed or unemployed? Is there a jobs initiative that may be worthwhile examining? Does anybody have a plan? And Sarah Palin, I think we need to talk about her a little bit more this hour. Her appeal certainly can't be ignored. What does it mean and how does it play into upcoming elections? All of that on the table, and you can bring to the table whatever you would like. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. It's always one of my favorite holidays. And here we go. Another week. Lots to talk about. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And if you'd like to send an email, you can do that as well. That's up and running. It's talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Hi, Julie.
Kathleen, how are you?
A pleasure. I'm kind of full still, are you?
a little groggy.
You do Thursday, and then you think, oh, I could eat a lot on Friday, too, and then why not Saturday, and why not Sunday? A little bit too much food. But Thanksgiving's good, isn't it? I really like Thanksgiving.
Everyone loves Thanksgiving. They like it more than Christmas now, I think.
I do, too. You don't have to worry about all the presents and the da-da-da-da-da. You just fix a great meal and sit with your family and talk about Afghanistan. That's what we did. We talked about Afghanistan. But we do that almost every day in my family. Well, it's great to have you on the air again. Nice
Thanks.
To talk
great
to you.
Great to be back.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be a big week for the president. Do you have any inkling what he's going to say tomorrow?
Yeah, we do have a little bit. They've been sending out some signals, some trial balloons. He said last week, and I'm sure you caught this, he said, I'm going to finish this job
right.
about Afghanistan. When the Prime Minister of India was in town, the president made that declaration. It was interesting. He likes to set these markers for himself. He doesn't always live up to them in terms of, like, we're going to close Gitmo and stuff like that, but he wants to end the war in Afghanistan. So I think the speech tomorrow night from West Point is going to be about increasing the troops right away, giving them a certain number of more troops, but then a plan for ratcheting back and getting out of there and turning Afghanistan back over to Afghanistan.
Well, that's a big job.
It's huge. It's huge. I mean, we've been there now 8 years. The Soviet Union was there for 9 before they left, badly defeated.
Right.
And Obama doesn't want that on his record.
Yeah.
So he wants to wrap it up and leave the country in good shape, which is tough, because the fear is as soon as we pull out, it's going to go right back to crazy, you know, frontier lawlessness.
Mm-hmm. And he needs to train a whole number of Afghan troops, doesn't he?
Right.
There
and
aren't
it's not,
many.
It's kind of a dangerous job, you know? I mean, it's not unlike in Iraq, where people were signing up to be on the police force there, and then they'd end up getting killed, or they were, you know, became very corrupt. It's hard to convert a country like Afghanistan to a functional democracy. It's a big job.
Yeah, it is a big job. What kind of reception do you think he's going to get from the American people? This is hard to gauge, but he's not real popular on what you just outlined, I think.
Right. Well, that's a tough one, because you remember Afghanistan was the just war. It was the correct war. And when President Bush launched it, a lot of people were for it. But now it's gone on a long time. People don't really know where it's going. We've lost a lot of lives over there, and it's an incredibly unpopular war. There's not much political will, especially in the Democratic Party, for continuing this war. And that's one of the things that Obama is up against. His own party doesn't want to keep funding this.
Right.
And the Republicans, meanwhile, want to keep fighting it hard. And he's trying to sort of split the difference, which is going to make him popular with nobody.
Right.
So it's a tough sell.
The analogy has been made so often, I'm sure you know, that this could be his Vietnam. It could be
right.
his undoing.
Right. Right. It's tough. I mean, it's tough when the public is against you, your own party is against you, you're spending crazy money on the war, and you want to keep it going a little longer.
Right. I think about this issue, and we've done so many programs in Afghanistan. We all have these images of young girls trying to go to school whose faces are disfigured because and not being able to go to school in not very many schools, and it just tugs at your heart. I don't know if there's any way to open up the path to women and others in that country that we can do or anybody can do.
I know, that's the problem. You know, President Bush had declared that job more or less done, but then the news coming out of Afghanistan showed that no, that job wasn't done at all, and all the progress that had been made, you know, there was a great deal of backsliding, and a lot of news organizations have pulled out of Afghanistan because it's very dangerous and it's very expensive to keep a bureau there. So there's not as much news, there's not as much reporting, and what we hear isn't good.
Talk about expensive. How about keeping our troops there? That's a huge expense.
It is. It is. And, you know, he's got some real budget problems. He's got some serious, serious budget problems. And the war doesn't help that at all.
Who do you think he's listening to? He certainly has labored over this decision. It's been months now that he's been meeting with various people. Who all was he meeting with, Julie, and why has it taken so long to make a decision?
Well, it actually didn't take that long. It was just the Republicans were trying to pressure him, and the Pentagon certainly wanted to pressure him a lot, and we saw a lot of leaks out of the Pentagon about what those discussions were. He was meeting with Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden was in those meetings, Stanley McChrystal, who's the general in charge of Afghanistan right now, other military types, Gates, Defense Secretary Gates was in those meetings, and these are the people he listens to. He listens to everyone and then really takes his own advice. You know, he likes to defy expectations, and he likes to keep his own counsel, and he doesn't always do the expected thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes him a very interesting president to watch. The fact that he refused to be pressured or hustled on this deal, and rather than just giving in to what the generals wanted, just giving them the troops and letting them go about their business, he refused to do that. And it kind of shows he has a real defiant streak about leadership. But he's not a decider like Bush was. You know, make a decision and let the chips fall where they may. He's a real deliberator.
Do you think he'll give them what's McChrystal asking for? 34,000?
Yeah, it was a little more than that. It was more like 40,000. I have no idea what number Obama's going to come up with.
And the significance of speaking at West Point, is it significant?
Sure. Yeah, it's always significant at West Point. It's some real political theater to go to West Point and deliver a speech like this. You know, interestingly, he has never addressed the nation from the Oval Office, and so a lot of us in the White House press corps thought he was going to do that. You know, use that setting because there's no other setting like the Oval to address the nation. But going to West Point, you know, going to where the elite are training for combat and things like that, and to be there, it's really. Again, a real sort of set piece for the president.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing, isn't it, Julie, when you think about 8 years and what do you have? You have a government that's corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
The head of the government, the president's brother, is a drug runner. You don't have a lot of confidence in the government on the part of the Afghan people. And we've been there 8 years. That's getting your college undergraduate, your master's, and your doctorate.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You think of kids who were born when we went to war are now, you know, in second or third grade. And exactly. And then the poppy trade in Afghanistan, the drugs there is just another terrible problem. And it's really the only lucrative industry. So in terms of, you know, having our work cut out for us there, propping up the government, propping up the economy, turning over security, because if we leave it in a chaotic mess, that's going to be a terrible legacy for the United States, and we will be blamed. We've now taken responsibility for Afghanistan.
Right. Well, it's going to play out in some way or another.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate debating health care reform, it's been described, it's going to be a contentious and difficult month for the
mm-hmm.
Senate.
That's a tough one. You know, this whole issue of a public option for health care, that's probably going to go die in the Senate. They don't want that. It's going to be a really intense debate. And Obama has said he wants to sign a bill before the end of the year, and I don't think they're going to meet that deadline at all.
You don't?
No.
Huh.
No. The Senate, much like Obama, does everything on their own time, and they will not be pushed or pressured. They're going to take their time on this. And plus, you know, they like to go on break a lot. They're here for like a few more weeks, a couple more weeks, and then they're gone for Christmas. And then, you know, then it's New Year's, and then we're into next year. So
right.
It's hard to see them getting it done. Because even if the Senate passes a bill, in the next couple of weeks. It still has to go back to conference. They have to work out the differences with the House bill, and that's going to be the real work. That's going to take a lot of time.
You think a public option is out in the Senate?
I do. I don't think they like it. I don't think they want to do it. I don't think there's any political will for that in the Senate. The House is much more liberal than the Senate. They're much more lefty. And so they came out with that, and they're happy with it. But the Senate, it's not their cup of tea.
Is it just the four conservative Democrats who are the holdouts?
No, there are lots of conservative Democrats and Republicans, obviously, and all banded together. And even some of the liberals, you know, there's, we have election year coming up next year, and people aren't going to be willing to take a chance on this at all because the public doesn't like it, and the public is very divided, even about health care now. There's a new poll out today saying that the public opinion leans against doing anything about health care reform. You know, there seems to be a real sense that whatever Congress is up to isn't really going to help anyone. That's sort of like a growing sense that you see in these public opinion polls. It's not really going to help people.
Really? And yet, not that long ago, people were saying, we got to do something about health care reform.
Right. And then they see what's being done, and, you know, and people keep being warned and told that no matter what Congress does, your premiums are going up next year by a lot. You know, the prices aren't coming down. And nothing much really changes unless you're uninsured, and then you have some new options. But for people who are insured through their employers, it's not really going to change that much.
Mm-hmm. But the employers are having to pay a lot more, too, for their premiums.
Right, exactly.
Well, that would be discouraging if nothing happens.
Something will happen, but whether or not it helps people, that's a big question.
Yeah. I don't want to spend much time on her, except that the other person you can't ignore is Sarah Palin. Her appeal just can't be ignored. There is something captivating about her, and I'm trying to get to the bottom of it. Two questions. What does it mean, Julie, and what does it mean for upcoming elections, and what is her appeal?
You know, part of her appeal is that she's gorgeous. She is. I mean, you can't put that aside. If you know, she had these same skills and the same personality in a less appealing package, we wouldn't spend all this time being fascinated by her.
Right.
And, you know, as a woman, I hate to say that, and I hate to ascribe things to looks, but in politics, that's a very big deal. It's very potent. There aren't a lot of hot women in politics, and she's definitely one. She gets a lot of attention. And, you know, her book is a real score-settling. It seems real vengeful. And her book tour is fascinating. And, you know, I think people were just a little tired of the health care reform debate.
Mm-hmm.
And we were happy to see her come along with her book and give us something a little more interesting, a little spicier to talk about.
So she's going to be around for the next couple of years?
Yeah, she's not going away. But, you know, she's a public figure now. She's not a politician. She gave up her political career. Her future political prospects are uncertain. Even the Republican Party isn't even sure that she's qualified. You know, they like her, but I'm not sure they want her to be their leader, their figurehead. I've been kind of joking around here about a Lou Dobbs Sarah Palin ticket in 2012 funny that would be.
That may be strong. You never know.
You never know. I know. And you know, her popularity is scaring off candidates like Mike Huckabee, who's now sounding like he's not going to run in 2012. And, you know, but she might run up against the same problems he did if she decides to run, which is the establishment Republicans didn't like him. They didn't get behind him. He couldn't raise money because, you know, the grassroots liked him, but you can't really win that way.
Right. Is Lou Dobbs running for Senate?
Sounds like he is. He's dying to run for something. I mean, he seems very susceptible to that kind of flattery. And I don't know, as someone who has always covered politics and takes politics very seriously, I always find it a little annoying when, you know, people with no political experience want to make the Senate or the presidency their first ever run for office. He might be in for a bit of a rude awakening about what that's really like.
Right.
How tough that is.
Yeah. Global warming, big conference the president is going. Does that surprise you?
Surprises me very much. He'd been holding out on making a decision about that because he didn't want to be the only world leader there. Gordon Brown from the UK had been pressuring him, trying to get him to go. But, you know, no one listens to Gordon Brown these days. He's
right.
So unpopular. So I was really surprised, especially because the world is a little unhappy with the lack of progress the U.S. has made on cap and trade and getting our own sort of polluting house in order, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And the Chinese president may be going now, too, I read last week.
Yeah, I know. Well, the Chinese really want to be citizens of the world. They really want to be taken seriously and not marginalized at all. So they're making lots of commitments on what they're going to do in terms of bringing down their own air pollution, their own emissions.
Yeah. I want to give you one quote from Henry Kissinger, of all people, and then we'll go to phone calls. He was quoted in the Times yesterday saying about Obama, he reminds me of a chess grandmaster who's played his opening in six simultaneous games, but he hasn't completed a single game, and I'd like to see him finish one. What do you think of that, Julie?
You know, there really is something to that. On Saturday Night Live, they have a running joke line about how Obama hasn't done anything. And when they're joking about it on, you know, a comedy show, then it really has entered sort of the popular consciousness. And he really does have a lot of balls in the air, but what's he really done? It's a big question.
Let's go to phone calls. Julie Mason is our guest for All Things Political today. White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner. Our phone number, one line is open, is 800-486-8655. If you'd prefer to send an email, that address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Julie, starting with Richard from Fort Atkinson. Hi, Richard.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering if your guest has made the connection between the health care debate and the delay in making an announcement about strategy in Afghanistan. It occurs to me that Mr. Obama has always been suppliant and compliant with the military. I considered his decision a foregone conclusion, my conclusion was that he did not want to contaminate the healthcare debate with a simultaneous debate on Afghanistan, and so held off as long as he possibly could. On the question of whether or not it was a war of choice, a war of necessity, you will recall that we attacked Afghanistan at the end of October in 2001. We did not wait to settle outstanding questions on 9/11, and yet we used that for the justification of attacking Afghanistan, and the government has never made a clear-cut case of why that war was necessary. And finally, the moral problem of conducting war in that country for the last decade, and now Obama says it might be the next decade, against a country that has a gross national product of only $600 or $700 million, a very, very primitive country. It is really disgusting.
Julie.
Yeah, well, Richard makes a really great point about the connection between healthcare reform and the Afghanistan thing. Obama really needs the liberal wing of his party to get healthcare reform passed. He needs to keep them on board. But as I said, they're very, very unhappy about where he's going with Afghanistan. So that was a big concern. That was definitely part of the calculation. Seems like by splitting the distance on this, he's trying to have it both ways by having it neither way. It'll be interesting to hear the reaction from his own party after the speech. With regard to justifying the war in Afghanistan, Obama has called it a war of necessity, and I think that the previous administration and this one felt that routing out the Taliban and those training grounds where al-Qaeda was learning their skills before they attacked the U.S. was an important war of necessity. That's certainly the argument that they've made. I think there are a lot more questions about the war in Iraq and why that was necessary, and they certainly used 9/11 as a fraudulent justification for that. But yeah, exactly. Waging war on Afghanistan, there are moral questions about it, because what are we fighting for over there?
Willem is next from Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Hi. You know, the thing with the health care, I think the fact that people are so confused and undecided about it, I think that's exactly what they intended to do. And you said something about the House of Representatives being more lefty. I think that this term, using the term the left as any part of the U.S. government, I think is really not very accurate. I can't think of any member of the House of Representatives that I would call left wing. I mean, every industrialized country in the world has a health care program for their citizens. I don't think that's a radical or left wing idea.
Julie.
Yeah, William, you make a good point. Of course, I was being somewhat flippant about that. Compared to the Senate, the House is a little more lefty, but you're right, there aren't any overt leftists in there. There's certainly just your run-of-the-mill politicians of different stripes. But I was just making a comparison to the Senate, where they're a little more conservative generally.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk for a moment about jobs. How high does the unemployment rate have to get before the government seriously considers job stimulus in a big way?
I know. Well, you know, that it's funny you bring that up. The president is having a job summit on Thursday. He's hosting it, and it's sort of like a big roundtable to figure out how to create jobs without adding to the deficit, which is a big problem. How do you do that? They had really hoped and promised that the $787 billion stimulus program would jumpstart job creation. That's really, really has not been the case, not in a significant way. So that's something that they're going to be talking about a lot this week. And then after the job summit, the president is hitting the road. He's going to Allentown, Pennsylvania on Friday. He's going to keep talking up jobs, how to create jobs.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big part of the focus of this week.
Yeah. Willem, thanks for the call. Jim from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Four quick things. First off, it's the responsibility of the listeners to make sure that the two-party system really is a two-party system and push the Democrats to be progressive. Secondly, we have to hold the legislators responsible for the appropriations. The war can't operate without the appropriations. Third point is that in terms of understanding why we're in Afghanistan in the first place, just Google in the net under Afghanistan pipeline with groups like whatreallyhappened.com, and check out about the oil and natural gas resources in the Caspian Sea area, which is the real reason we're in Afghanistan. And finally, we can't trust the government to tell the truth. The Saturday Milwaukee Journal had a war inquiry that's going on in England, and a former British ambassador to the UN said that the United States was hell-bent on the invasion and pointed out that we sabotaged, for example, opportunities to really tie down the weapons of mass destruction issue. So, you know, the government is not to be trusted. They will lie us into war, and we have to fight against it.
Julie.
Well, I think the listener brings up some really interesting points and certainly gives voice to a lot of the suspicion about the government and what the government's up to that is behind, you know, low opinion polls for health care reform and everything else the government is doing. I think people at this point just don't trust the government to operate in their best interests, and I think it's going to really play out. Real anti-incumbent fever in next year's elections. If things continue the way they are now, if the economy doesn't improve significantly, we're going to see a lot of incumbents of both parties losing their jobs.
Mm-hmm. And how do you explain all of this? Is it because the president has not lived up to his expectations? Is it because he was handled such a difficult situation when he assumed office that he couldn't move things rapidly? What is it?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. You know, I think the economy has really befuddled this administration. I think they really have not been able to change the dynamic. And people don't feel better. The government keeps telling us that we're in a recovery, that things are getting better. But I don't feel any better. I don't know anyone who feels any more secure in their job now than they did 6 months ago. And I think that's been a real problem. I also think that the Obama administration came in really overselling what they were going to be able to do with a lot of promises on what was going to happen, and we really haven't seen those promises come to fruition, especially on the stimulus, which they said, you know, it's going to happen fast, we got to pass this really fast. And then when the economy didn't show immediate improvement, they said, well, wait, and now this is a 2-year program and this needs 2 years to work. Well, with people out of a job, they don't really have 2 years to give this process.
Yeah. I really think that things might change if the people were feeling better about their future and their work and not being underemployed or unemployed.
Right, and I think a lot of that comes down to the economy, and is the economy going to get better?
Right. We go to George from Milwaukee. Hi, George.
Hi, good morning. I guess I would disagree with your guest when she said that the majority of people are now opposed to public option. From the polls that I've seen that stretch out over the past year, and have gone up through the middle of November, there is a majority of people. You know, it depends on how the question's asked a lot of times, of course, and you're going to get a variety of results. But there still seems to be a majority of Americans that are in favor of a public option for health care. So to say that's not the case is not correct.
Well, I've seen polls that do show that a majority are not for the public option. So I guess you're right. I guess it does depend on how you ask the question. I do think there's not a lot of political will in Congress for the public option. I think a lot of that is poll-driven.
Thank you, George, very much for your call. What about how Congress is going to respond to whatever it is the president says tomorrow night? If he calls for an increase, a substantial increase in troops, and it sounds like he will,
mm-hmm.
got a lot of Democrats who are really worried about this. How could they hold up his plan?
Well, the funding. I mean, they control the funding. That's a way to do it. But the problem is a lot of Republicans want to send more troops. So if Obama can put together a coalition of moderate Democrats and Republicans to approve more funding for Afghanistan, then he can get it done. And it leaves the liberals sort of hanging out there alone. You know, members like Russ Feingold, who just really don't want to see any more money go to Afghanistan. But that's the only way they could do it.
Right.
The money.
It's kind of an unusual situation he's in, right? I mean, you say, and I think that's interesting, that he defies expectations
mm-hmm.
on a lot of grounds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he goes his own way. It's interesting to see this play out, is that during the campaign, a lot of people projected different things on him. Oh, he's so liberal, or he's so centrist. And now he's really kind of hard to pin down. He's a little
right.
bit all over the place.
Yeah. Paul from St. Paul. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
Real good.
Good.
I have more of a comment in you know, listening to what people are saying on the air. And I've basically been through the recession of 1980, 1981, and also, of course, viewing of what the previous administration. Now, I hear a lot of people complaining about sending more troops to Afghanistan, but if people really look what the Bush administration did, I think the war in Iraq was pretty much unnecessary and more was a war focused on oil. Compared to where in Afghanistan, we're focusing on where the source of terrorism is, basically your Al-Qaeda and where everybody trains, more or less. And also regards to the economy, you know, people are out there saying, you know, the economy's not changing around, what's taking so long? I think people need to look back to 1980 and 1981, when the Reagan administration was in. I was one of those standing in the unemployment line, and I know people who are unemployed now, and I hear how much easier it is to get the unemployment benefits coming in and then all the stimulus packages that Obama's been signing. I don't ever recall the Reagan administration approving one stimulus package, and I remember how much more difficult it was then. And another statement is regards to people thinking, you know, the economy's not turning around. Look how long the economy took to turn around back in 1980 and 81 when Reagan was in. It doesn't happen overnight. And also, for our economy to turn around is also dependent on economies of other countries to buy our goods and services, which stimulates everybody's economy. We're really in a world recession, not a U.S. recession. And I think people need to be thankful for all the stimulus packages that Obama and the current administration has been signing. Because just think, if you didn't have that unemployment coming in, you'd be worse off than you are, because I know people, close friends, who've been getting unemployment for over 2 years. And back in 1981, I never received that much unemployment. And to get the first unemployment check, it took a good at least 8 to 10 weeks to finally get it in. And now, today, it's, what, direct deposit right into your bank account? All you got to do is make a phone call? You know, it's like I said, it's a vicious cycle. It's just, I just look at it as where it's 1980, 1981 all over again.
Right, Julie. Without Reagan's tax cuts this time.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have stimulus.
Yeah.
I think Obama raised some expectations, some real sort of public expectations about what he was going to be able to do with the stimulus. And I think he lost some support on that.
Is it fair, though, to say, hey, the guy hasn't been in office that long, the problems are substantial,
yes.
Give him some time?
Yes, it absolutely is. I mean, of course, it's going to take a long time for this economy to turn around. But again, the problem is that they sold themselves as problem solvers, people who are going to get it
right.
done quick.
Yeah. Let's go. Thanks, Paul, for your call. Earl is next. Hi, Earl.
Good morning. Great show. I think we need much more specific information on why we're in Afghanistan. it's never kind of resonated. We were justifiably angry after 9/11, but was that the move to make? I think terrorism can emerge in almost any part of the third world, and we have to be much more grounded and selective as to what we do. Frontline had a long documentary on this situation and found out if we're going to pacify the civilians, we have very few people that can speak the language. So we roll these community relations troops into these small villages and talk to the elders, but no one really knows what we're saying. I mean, we need much more information on why go there, and if the Tea Party people and everybody are so concerned about how much we're spending, look at the tab on Iraq and Afghanistan. We're committing billions to this, and very little information other than we were very angry about 9/11, and I am too, but is this the way to do it?
Right. Well, what you're talking about is the counterinsurgency strategy that Stanley McChrystal has been wanting to do in Afghanistan. It really does. It targets the people. And it kind of tries to bring the people on board, and it's more about information gathering and developing support and developing sort of civil institutions rather than actually going out and shooting people, which would be more of a counterterrorism strategy. It's very expensive. It's very time-consuming, and that's been one of the sticking points for Obama. He just doesn't want to commit the time and the money to do it.
It is a quagmire, isn't it? The more you talk about it, the more you think, ooh, what are our goals? He's a great speech giver. There's no doubt about that. But he's got a lot of questions to answer tomorrow night.
He really does. He really does. As for him being a really great speech giver, I don't know. I mean, he was great on the campaign trail, and he gave some wonderful speeches. The race speech stands out in my mind. But when I see him speak around the White House, he does rely on the teleprompter. He's not good extemporaneously. He's not good sort of just talking, you know, off the top of his head. And I don't know, it's kind of interesting to watch. It'd be interesting to see how he does tomorrow night. I assume we'll see the teleprompter, which we call the TOTUS, the teleprompter.
Oh, do you?
It's called the TOTUS, yeah. It's ever present.
Does he use it more than other presidents have,
yes.
Julie? He does.
Yes, he really does. Just as he doesn't seem to have, he's so busy, and I understand, and we're all differently abled, but he doesn't really have the ability to study a speech and sort of give it just by glancing at notes. He really has to read it.
Thanks, Earl, very much for your call. We go next to Dan from Janesville. Hi, Dan.
Yes, hello. I was glad to hear that you brought up and people have been bringing up the stimulus, because I wanted to just throw out there as a comment. I feel like the stimulus was where this administration and President Obama kind of lost a lot of the momentum and set the tone for the rest of the big decisions coming down the line after that, meaning there was this big, huge crisis, and everybody knew it, and he had to do something, and somebody had to do something, and they had to do something big, but instead of listening to people like Robert Reich and Joseph Stiglitz, he put Geithner and Lawrence Summers in charge, basically Wall Street insiders, went and basically put off the really difficult decisions about the reforms that needed to happen. And that kind of lost a lot of the liberal, you know, wing of the Democrats, and the activists kind of dropped out of the scene. And so when it comes to Afghanistan and healthcare and global and the climate change thing, it kind of basically the writing was on the wall that he was not going to be super bold in his policy proposals. I mean, he's only been bold in actually just acknowledging all of these problems at the same time, which is more than you can say about the previous administration. But in terms of the policy proposals, they have not been bold, and they probably won't be. And I think it started with that missed opportunity with the first crisis when he first came into office. So I'd love to hear your comments. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Dan, for the call.
Yeah, Dan makes a really, really interesting point. And I think what he was saying was that Obama lost a lot of credibility on the stimulus. So it certainly was a case in Washington where Congress felt very pressured to approve that money very fast on some really big promises from the administration. And now we see Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, is under fire by members of Congress from both parties demanding that he step down, saying that the fiscal policies of this administration have been a failure and that he needs to step down and let someone else try to take over this job. And he absolutely refuses. And so far, Obama is supporting him, but I wonder how long that will last if these calls to resign keep up.
So Obama really likes him, right? He must.
He does, but Obama is willing to kind of drop anyone who becomes a political liability for him. He doesn't have that intense loyalty thing that the Bushies did. You know, I mean, you look what happened to Van Jones, the green jobs guy who became a bit of a liability, and they just dropped
right.
him. They just didn't want to deal with it. So, you know, Geithner, obviously a cabinet member, that's a bigger thing when you lose a cabinet member. So I wonder how long the support is gonna stay.
Yeah.
We'll have to see.
Julie Mason is our guest for All Things Political this hour. She is the White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We've been talking about Afghanistan, about jobs, the stimulus, global warming, a variety of issues, and many of those issues will be debated. They'll be front and center issues this week. We also have an email address. Nobody sent us an email today. If you want to, please go ahead. That's talk@WPR.org. And we have one phone line open too, 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls. Steve from Madison. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I feel like I'm kind of piggybacking a little bit on the last gentleman's part of his comment. And I just wanted to get your guest comment, I guess maybe a little detailed about who he's got. He's got President Obama, I mean, on his team of people that are doing the bailout. It seems like with the health care and Afghanistan, it seems like the whole thing with the bailout now is kind of flying under the radar, and it seems like all the progressives, like the other gentleman was referring to, have been pushed to the side. You got Paul Volcker, and his ideas were, you know, really big in his campaign, and he's nowhere to be seen. Like you said, Robert Reich, you know, Paul Krugman, who I think had the best ideas of anybody, but everybody is so involved with Wall Street. Think tanks through Clinton, you know, they're also pro NAFTA, pro globalization, and you know nothing about workers and middle class and poor. And I just think that if he keeps these people, you know, the there's not going to be any type of reform at all. And I was just wondering what your guest had to say about that.
Okay.
Well, it's interesting that Steve mentions Volcker because Obama recently convened some of his private sector financial advisors, economic advisors, and Volcker was literally sitting at his right hand. And Obama is very deferential to Volcker and heeds his advice, listens to him. So he is a real behind-the-scenes player. You don't see him out front very much. But that's someone Obama does listen to. And it's interesting that Steve mentioned, kept saying, bailout. And one of the things that Obama is considering right now is whether to extend the TARP, which was the financial services bailout. There's a bunch of money left over, a certain number of billions, I forget off the top of my head how much, and it was very unpopular. You remember all those bonuses for bank executives that really got people mad, saying, why is taxpayer money going for these,
right.
these bonuses and everything? Well, the administration wants to keep doing TARP. They want to keep putting that money out there, but they haven't been able to figure out how to sell it. So that's one of the things they're talking about behind the scenes, and I it'll be interesting to see that play out because, again, it's very politically unpopular, but Obama likes it. He thinks it's helping the economy.
Mm-hmm. And what about this association with Wall Street? The American public is a little bit upset about all of this. Is it just that's the way things are done? I think they're expecting a break. You know, so much has been said. What about Main Street? We'll get rid of Wall Street. What about Main Street? What does Wall Street do for this administration?
What indeed? I'm not even really sure. I do think that's a political argument, though. What about Main Street? Certainly, it seems the policies of this administration and the prior one really did a lot for Wall Street when Wall Street wasn't doing a lot for Main Street. But I think that Obama takes a long view of this and says, you know, if we help out Wall Street now, it's going to help Main Street down the road. And I think that's their justification for doing it, that if these banks fail, it's going to hurt people more than just giving these banks money to continue.
Jeff is next from Milwaukee. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, and thank you for allowing me to speak.
Sure.
I am a huge supporter of Barack Obama and voted for him and had all the excitement that most of the country did when he was running. But I have a fear, and it is that the position is making the man and the man is not making the position.
Mm.
It's almost like everything he talks about has become a Christmas tree, an overburdened Christmas tree, for every special interest taking credit for him being elected. And he's, I want the real Barack Obama to step up and tell, you know, America what they want to hear again, which is more decisive, more simple, not so complex, not so ambiguous in many respects. And I'm looking forward to him going forward, but I fear that right now the position is making the man.
And where do you want him to move that he hasn't moved?
Well, just take, for instance, I'm talking about specific sacrifices. In the debates, we watched him almost, I'm not going to say snickering, but it was a major bone of contention when he stated to Hillary Clinton, people don't have health insurance because they can't afford it. We don't need to be charging them fines and making it mandatory. That's all changed now in the bill process. It's going to be mandatory, and there are serious fines that people will pay for not being on health care. And I think he's had to acquiesce in certain areas and has in others that I don't think he's had to, but has anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same holds true with decisions that have been made regarding Guantanamo and decisions that have been made regarding our conflicts, our two conflicts overseas.
Mm-hmm. Julie.
Yeah, I think Jeff is really on point. I would say that campaigning is a lot different from governing. You know, Bush reportedly had a really funny comment about Obama. He said, this cat doesn't know what he's getting into. And I think once Obama came to the White House and saw what a mess everything was, you know, Gitmo, unfixable, the economy, unfixable, Afghanistan, unfixable, he started to make the compromises that are inevitable once you get into an office like the presidency.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff, very much for your call. Christopher, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Before we went to the break, there was a comment from your guest about credibility, and I would like to ask your guest about the credibility that she has working for the Washington Examiner when she's talking about anything left or biased left, working for an arch-conservative, Philip Anschultz. And what his whole agenda is.
I think Julie is pretty fair-minded, you know, about
no, I'm happy to answer that. Yeah, I do work for the Washington Examiner. I spent 20 years at the Houston Chronicle, and I got laid off because of this terrible economy. I came to the Washington Examiner and was assured when I was hired that they wanted my reporting to be straight up. They didn't want it to toe a conservative line, and that's certainly been the case. My stories are fair, and they're honest about what's going on in the White House, and they're not conservative. The paper has a very strong conservative editorial voice, but so do a lot of papers. So does the Wall Street Journal, and so I'm very comfortable working here, and I don't have a particular political agenda at all.
Let me go next to Peg from Rice Lake. Hi, Peg.
Hi there.
Hi.
I keep hearing people say talk about our invasion of Afghanistan, and that the public was in favor of the war, and so on. As I remember it, we had permission to go into Afghanistan initially to look for Osama bin Laden. I thought it was the first thing we did after 9/11, and I didn't think it was an invasion. Can someone straighten me out?
I think it was an invasion, wasn't it? Once troops go in, but maybe not a sort of forcible invasion, but we did go in there with more than just CIA agents.
People do ask the question, Julie, which is a valid question, why is it so hard to find this guy after all of these years? Really?
I know. Boy, I know. And, you know, you don't really hear that much about him anymore. Obama never mentions him. And Bush, toward the end, stopped mentioning him because they can't find the guy. He seems to have a really loyal network of people who are willing to hide him and conceal him. And he remains at large. It's true.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. We go to Gary next from Madison. Hi, Gary.
I think that Obama's getting kind of a bum rap here. I think he's done a sterling job. When you think about the fact of how close this country came to falling off the edge, really, at the end of the last administration, and how Wall Street has recovered, and I know that none of you seem to like Wall Street, but you folks who are state employees should have a smile on your face when you look at your end-of-the-year results on the Wisconsin State Retirement Fund. And I know my 401k, while it was down 40%, has recovered pretty nicely in the last 12 months. It isn't all back, but it's on its way. So I think the Geithner has done a great job, and I think people don't realize how close to disaster we really were and how Obama kind of took over the reins and called some shots. I think he's been very decisive. He's done some good things. I'll take my comments
off
the air. Okay.
Thanks for the call.
That's a really good point. And, yeah, things you don't hear such bad news out of the stock market anymore. Can he take credit for that? I don't know. Unemployment continues to be a real problem, 10.2%
right
currently. And so that's a number I think people focus on. But I think the caller makes a lot of good points.
Mm-hmm. It hasn't trickled down, perhaps. There are a lot of people who are not in the stock market. If you don't have a job, probably you're not
right.
going to be in the stock market. Or
right.
people who
and,
are.
And my portfolio is still, on life support.
Exactly.
But, whatever.
Well, the report that came out over the weekend or last week, and the huge increase in the number of people on food stamps, that's a wake up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. A lot of people relying on government help who never had before.
Right.
A lot of people who lost their homes, in the mortgage crisis. It's another thing.
Right. Thanks, Gary, for your call. Mike from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
All right. You?
Doing well.
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to call. I don't know. I keep hearing the same things. We all want to blame Obama, but we don't have anybody coming out to the midterm elections, and our local representatives aren't really doing their job. I think it's just it's kind of a problem with the general election here for the presidency that no one really gets involved with their state representatives.
Oh, you mean their members of Congress? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, with Congress. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Congress.
Yeah, I know. Those elections are very low turnout, but they're so important. That's why I think it'll be interesting to watch 2010 and see how many people turn out. I think there's a real anti-incumbent fervor in the country right now in both parties.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's it. Yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there. So.
Thanks, Mike.
All right.
Yeah, yes, good day.
We go to another Mike from Oshkosh. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. This is a forward-looking question. In 2010, of course, we all know that elections pretty much drive policy half the time. I'm wondering if the guest has an insight as to who has the president's ear. We know Nancy Pelosi and people that want to maintain control of the House and Senate, they essentially don't want to balance the budget because that means you tick people off because you cut programs and you have to raise taxes. So there's that pull of the tug-of-war rope on the left, but on the right, who has his ear? Is it Paul Volcker? Is it Peter Orszag? Who is it that's telling the president we have to address these debts and deficits? Otherwise, everything we're doing is going to go right down the tubes because this debt is essentially going to consume us.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly a lot of the Republicans in Congress have been saying that, and he listens to them. But, he doesn't really need anyone to tell him that. He knows that. He knows that that's a problem. He promised in his first term to cut the deficit in half and not raise taxes on the middle class, and it's really hard to see how he's going to get that done. That is a huge job, especially because, these members of Congress, they want him to keep spending money so they can keep getting reelected. So he's all at cross purposes with regards to the deficit. But as for who he's listening to, his inner circle really is Rahm Emanuel, David Axelrod, and Robert Gibbs. And those are the guys he listens to, and those are the guys who are setting the agenda.
Thanks for the call. We go to Ellen from Middleton. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I just wanted to identify myself as a Republican. I did not vote for Obama. I really wanted to, but I couldn't bring myself because of the fiscal policies. I think that he was the right man at the right time, but he's lost his branding. I think the health care thing is a debacle, and I'm hoping that it doesn't pass, but they can really seize the moment for reform. Anyway, I guess that would be my contribution to the conversation.
No, I just want to ask you a question. When you say he's lost his branding, what was the branding, Ellen?
I think he branded himself as a moderate change agent, and I think he's lost. One of the beauties was his call to a better self, to higher values.
Right.
And I think that he can still seize that, but he's lost momentum. I don't see him calling us to be better selves as the way that he sort of did during the campaign. And I think he's floundering politically. I think he's in over his head.
That's an interesting point.
We have seen his approval ratings drop precipitously, but not to levels that should cause him any concern. He's currently hovering around 53%, and that's a good spot for him to be. That's where other presidents usually are at the end of the first year of their first term. Certainly, he came in, very high numbers, a lot of like hope and aspirations, and that he couldn't sustain. But I don't think anyone really expected him to.
He filled people with hope. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that in my lifetime. It was just a remarkable run, the whole campaign.
People still respond to him in that way. And I think, when he gets out on the road in the next few weeks or so, traveling around the U.S., he's really going to be feeling that again. People really still really do have strong personal feelings about him.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's quite a story.
Yeah.
It will always be. It will remain forever. Quite a story. Well, Julie, thank you so much for being with us. I love conversations with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Yeah, Julie Mason, who will have a very busy week covering the president this week and his speech before West Point. We, of course, will be listening to that tomorrow night as well, and we'll respond to it on our program on Wednesday morning. So all of you people who follow things closely, and that means all of you, just rest assured, we'll be on that story on Wednesday. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee. Julie Mason, White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner, our guest for this hour. And just a reminder that Mondays at 9, it's always All Things Political. We're on Facebook, too, in case you want to respond to anything you heard. Just go to WPR.org, find our show, maneuver it, and become a fan. And we'll talk more. This is the Ideas Network.